From the Sky News Centre at 6. The parents of two British children killed on a holiday in Corfu say they're shocked that an electrician who was prosecuted over their deaths was re-employed at the same hotel. Christy and Bobby Shepherd died from carbon monoxide poisoning from a faulty boiler in 2006. Christoph Louvros, who was found guilty of unlawful killing, has now been dismissed. But solicitor Gemma Vine says the family have another request.
They want the Louis Group to demolish bungalow 112. They want a playground to be built in its place in the memory of Christy and Bobby, and they do feel that's the least that hotel group can do.
The Prime Minister says renegotiating the UK's relationship with the EU will require patience and tenacity. He started that process today ahead of an in-out referendum on our membership at a summit with European leaders in Latvia. The former Scottish Secretary's apologised after admitting he leaked a memo about Nicola Sturgeon during the general election campaign to a national newspaper. It claimed she told the French ambassador she wanted David Cameron to remain in power. The SNP leader says it was untrue and a blatant dirty trick. She also thinks Alistair Carmichael needs to go further.
I think he owes an apology to his constituents, not so much for leaking the memo, but for saying in the election campaign that he didn't, that he knew nothing about it, that the first he knew about it was when he got called by a journalist about it.
NHS trusts in England ran up a deficit of £822 million in the 12 months to March. That's the gap between what they spend and what they bring in. It's a significant rise on the previous year when the deficit was just £115 million. Another man's appeared before magistrates charged over the Hatton Garden jewellery raid in central London. In all, nine men are now going through the courts in connection with the heist over Easter. That's the latest. I'm Andy Hayes.
Love Bristol.
Love, love, love.
BCFM 93.2.
A Bristol kind of love.
Britain is, in essence, a monarchy, not a democracy. Much of Britain still operates on a system of unelected power.
And at its centre are the Windsors, the old aristocracy, and their vast wealth.
Welcome back to BCFM's Politics Show with Old Labour Oxford economist Martin Summers and me, Tony Gosling. Those naughty Saudi Arabian royal family, that while we've been having our election, they've been using our tornado bombers to blow defenceless Yemen to kingdom come. And today we hear that ISIS now controls more than half of Syria. So we'll be discussing the Middle East later this hour. Also, another blast of the forbidden truth from the band Vicar of Virginia Water in Surrey. He's a world expert author on Zionism. But he's been told by the Bishop of Guildford if he talks about the Middle East in public or on social media, he'll be defrocked. So tonight, one of the most recent interviews with the Reverend Stephen Sizer, recorded before he was banned by the Bishop of Guildford earlier this year. We start this week, I think, Martin, by looking at this news today on antiwar.com that ISIS is now controlling more than half of Syria. Now, my thoughts about what's going on over there is very much that this is only the West is really only paying lip service to really fighting ISIS.
Well, if you look at the actual map of the areas they control, which I did the other night, it's mostly contiguous with the Turkish border on the north side of Syria. And that's where most of the jihadis have been coming in from. In actual fact, if you look at the way ISIS operates, if you look at where they clearly have no base in the major cities in Syria, and they've been infiltrated over the borders, particularly the Turkish border.
Now, many
and
people
MIT,
looking at this,
the Turkish intelligence services have clearly been aiding.
Many
them,
people will be looking at this from China and Russia and other parts of the world and saying, "Well, hang on a minute, this is just a NATO invasion. You're calling it ISIS. Well, you're saying it's not us, but it is."
It's fairly clear that the Iranians. I mean, you can. I'm just reporting what they're saying. The Iranians are fairly clear. They have reported that British and US planes and helicopters have been dropping supplies to ISIS. Now, that may or may not be true, but that is what the Iranians are saying. And openly in the Middle East, the Israelis certainly have taken fighters from Syria over the border into Israel for rest and recreation and for medical treatment. And in the Middle East in general, it's widely understood that ISIS is in fact the creation of NATO and the Gulf Cooperation Council, the Saudis, the Qataris and so on. But of course, public opinion inside Britain and in the West, in the US, is being told that this is a terrible bogeyman and we've got to go to war.
What we're not hearing, and what really is really annoying me about the mainstream press coverage of this, is the evidence for the West's covert support for ISIS.
Indeed.
I mean, for example, in Reuters in Turkey, this is just yesterday, they had an exclusive. Turkish intelligence services helped a ship to ship arms to the Syrian Islamic rebel areas. Turkey's state intelligence agency helped deliver arms to parts of Syria under Islamist rebel control during 2013 and 2014, according to prosecutor and court testimony from gendarmerie officers now seen by Reuters. The witness testimony contradicts Turkey's denials that it sent arms to the Syrian rebels and by extension contributed to the rise of Islamic State, which is now a major concern for NATO and the world.
Well, let's just cut to the chase here. Islamic State has been covertly supported by NATO, including Turkey, including Britain, including the US, and by the Gulf Cooperation Council. The purpose of this is to create enough chaos in Syria to justify an intervention to overthrow Assad, which is the real goal.
So this is overthrow Assad take two.
Yeah, because they've got the chemical weapons attack, if you remember, at Ghouta outside Damascus, which was blamed on Assad. I think the evidence is overwhelming. Now, Seymour Hersh wrote an article in the London Review of Books. He's just written a recent article about the non-killing of bin Laden. And he's very, you know, he's a Pulitzer Prize winner. He's probably the senior US reporter. And he showed convincingly that the chemical weapons were from Libya and had been infiltrated into Syria over the Turkish border by MIT, the Turkish intelligence services, working with Al-Nusra Front, which are not exactly aligned with ISIS, but a similar outfit. They are the real Al-Qaeda, supposedly. So in other words, they couldn't get away with that. So they've now changed tack and said, oh, we've got to go in to stop ISIS because they're carrying out all these beheadings. Although the videos showing the beheadings all come from Rita Katz's site website, searching for international terrorism and terrorist entities. And they're basically frauds. I mean, various people have looked at these
Bethesda, Maryland. Bethesda, Maryland, just around the corner from the National Security Agency.
Indeed, indeed. So in other words, the level of manipulation and propaganda over Syria is extraordinary. Just extraordinary. But I think if people think back that the Western intelligence services used to work with Islamist rebels when they were fighting the Soviet Union in the 1980s, but then they learned their lesson, it's absolutely wrong. NATO and the Gulf Cooperation Council are working very closely. The Saudis, for example, allowed all these people who were murderers on death row in Saudi Arabia to go out of prison, provided they went to Syria to fight with ISIS. And if we were serious about stopping ISIS, then we would have to bomb Turkey and bomb Saudi Arabia. And by the time, of course, since we're in alliance with those countries, we'd probably stop ISIS by bombing ourselves. Maybe the RAF should be bombing GCHQ. Maybe that's what we need to do.
So, yes, well, it's a bit of a controversial thing to say.
Well, I'm just pointing out how ridiculous all of this has become. And don't forget, people are dying. It's a big mess, and we are responsible. ISIS is largely a creation of our own intelligence services. There will be colonels and various others who know exactly what's going on. They should be punished, just like the bankers.
ISIS has got quite a big presence now, it seems, in Yemen. They're claiming responsibility for quite a lot of attacks there now, too.
Well, they've been dropped arms by the Saudis because, of course, the Houthis are sworn enemies of al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, the leaders of which were released from Guantanamo from Penny Lane, which is the opposite of Strawberry Fields Forever. And the fact is that the Saudis are encouraging ISIS in Yemen in order to bring down the Houthis.
Okay,
they are our allies.
Yesterday,
we work with them.
The Yemen Post newspaper. I really would recommend you follow this on Twitter if you're interested in what's happening in this poor little country. being bombed to bits by our planes and our bombs supplied by us to the Saudis, who seem to be having some sort of macho contest within their royal family about who can be the nastiest. And the Yemen Post newspaper is at Twitter. It's on Yemen Post News. Yesterday from them, we hear this, they're questioning, are there actually any strategic targets? In Sada yesterday, there were 65 airstrikes by the Saudis, 13 civilians and 4 Houthis were dead, 17 homes, and no military targets hit at all.
Well, one of the things about the bombing of ISIS in Iraq and in Syria is that there aren't any real targets to hit. And, of course, the other stories have been coming out that they've been told when they're going to be bombed, and that in actual fact they're bombing infrastructure. Like there was an oil refinery which the Syrian Arab Army was about to recapture from ISIS, and then the American planes came over and bombed the oil refinery to pieces so that the Syrians wouldn't get it, right, even though they'd managed to drive
ISIS.
See,
this is very difficult for journalists to actually get their heads around exactly what's going on in these military zones and report. You know, now, if that's true, what you've just said there, the military are being very sneaky about what they're doing. Well, on the one hand, the media, and constantly they're telling the media we're supporting one side, while on the other hand, in reality, they're supporting the other side.
Well, indeed, and in actual fact, people in the Middle East don't have such difficulty working this stuff out. If you'd lived through the civil war in Lebanon, as many people have, and survived it, you understand that all these kind of tricks and games are absolutely par for the course. But of course, in the West, people like to think that we're the good guys and the bad guys must be the other guys, and there's good guys and there's bad guys. And the real world is actually ferociously complicated, as you can imagine. These are very, very varied societies, huge differences between different groups. The possibilities of playing these games is enormous.
One wonderful story, though, came out of this hardship in Yemen, the hideous things that are going on there. They're basically defenceless people. They've got a few rifles. UN go in there, but they've got no anti-aircraft guns to stop these, or anti-aircraft missiles or anything to stop these planes coming over and bombing wherever they fancy. Was the story yesterday of a missile which entered a house in Yemen where there were 6 children. But it didn't explode, and there's some amazing pictures of the family stood around this enormous great bomb that came through the wall of their house but failed to explode. So at least that's one great tale from this absolute carnage. And it's not a war, this is just slaughter.
Well, wars are slaughter.
But it's a one-sided, they're not able really to fight back, are they?
Well, no, it's one-sided for the civilians, but the Houthis, I mean, a lot of the foot soldiers in the Saudi army are Yemenis. And in actual fact, this could lead to a situation where the Saudi regime implodes if it fails to win in Yemen. And don't forget, the Yemen's got a much bigger population than Saudi Arabia. I'm afraid, you see, we were talking about the economic crisis earlier. I'm afraid that the war in the Middle East, the potential war in the Ukraine, is all going to meld together into a huge arc of conflict running all the way from the Horn of Africa to China, and the crash and the war will be simultaneous.
A retired British Army colonel, former British Army Colonel Richard Kemp, is described by leading anti-Palestinian lawyers as one of the Jewish state's greatest allies. He was in a conference in Jerusalem, just literally 2 weeks ago, saying that actually Israelis should be allowed to kill more civilians. And he was talking about, just to quote him, he's actually saying that he as a battlefield commander needed to have a bit more wriggle room. And he was also saying that that these rules of engagement were there to be broken.
Well, he also very interestingly described himself as a thug, and he is a thug. And of course, if somebody like him turned up in the Ukraine to train the Ukrainian National Guard, then I would hope that he would come home in a box or severely wounded, because I'm not a pacifist.
His conference, the 2-day conference, is called Towards a New Law for War. And he used his platform to advocate for Israel, the US and the UK to be given more freedom to inflict collateral damage, which is a euphemism for killing civilians.
Well,
this is a former colonel in the British Army.
Indeed, and nobody in Belfast will be surprised that people like him are knocking around. What really angers me about these people is that they are dragging Britain's good name through the mud with all of their pronouncements. And, you know, in a world where civilians are being killed daily, if he was to have an accident or be deliberately killed by somebody, I wouldn't be crying, would you?
Well, yes, I would. I don't think anyone deserves to die what they're saying.
No, no, I think that's...
Perhaps he should be court-martialed or something, or whatever.
He's retired now, isn't he? So he can't be court-martialed. In any case, I don't suppose his views are entirely idiosyncratic. This is the problem. People want to have war, but they don't want the consequences. And I say to you that if Britain goes to war in an unjust cause, I want Britain to lose. If anybody goes to war in an unjust cause, they deserve to
lose. Now, this connects in a way maybe back with the low morale we were hearing about the British Army earlier on.
Indeed. I mean, the Veterans for Peace people I spoke to a few weeks ago at a meeting here in Bristol were saying that they went out to Afghanistan full of idealism and came back full of bitterness, because in actual fact, imposing your will on other people's countries is a wicked thing to do. And we shouldn't be doing it. Defences should be for defence. We've long ago given up on that sort of delusion, haven't we? We've got our fingers stuck in every pie on the planet. But we all want to come home, have a nice cup of tea, and we don't want to get too excited. That's just rubbish.
I think, but you know, you're right that many places in other parts of the world really do see Britain as a kind of rogue state. For example, badly governed. I think I said this here a couple of weeks ago, but talking to a German woman the other day, the Germans look across at Britain and say, "What's happened to you?" Their nickname for us is the Island Apes, people that just have actually kind of regressed down the evolutionary chain. They don't know how to run their affairs anymore.
Well, what we've become is an attack dog for the United States of America and for Israel. And, of course, what a British colonel is doing in Israel cheering on their defence forces, I really don't know. Because evidence suggests that Mossad were heavily involved in things like the 7/7 attacks in Britain, as you and I well know. That Netanyahu had a warning not to go to a meeting that morning on the tube in London because they'd had an earlier... They'd been given a warning not to go. Now, that sends to suggest, to point the finger at Mossad as being involved in the attack. In other words, we are at war with Israel, and this British colonel is going to Israel to give them a pat on the back. And ultimately, all of this is going to come to a head. People need to understand that the Western intelligence services are not run by people with white hats. They never have been, and they certainly aren't now. And basically, at the end of the day, those people have to be defeated, and they will be. Because in actual fact, they haven't won in Iraq, they haven't won in Afghanistan, they haven't won in Syria, they haven't won in Ukraine, they haven't won in Vietnam. They're not going to win. They're going to cause an awful lot of damage, but they're not going to win.
Before we go on to the final story, which is to do with Macedonia, Martin, have you got anywhere else around the world you'd like to zoom into to point out things that are going on there?
Well, obviously, the Ukraine is still an important point of focus.
Now, you've been at this, been commenting on international TV, haven't you, about this conference that's been going on?
I was on Rush Today yesterday talking about the meeting in Riga between the EU and it's the Eastern Partnership meeting. In other words, that it was set up to try and prize various countries away from their alliance with Russia. But in actual fact, both Armenia and Belarus, who are at the meeting, are in alliance with Russia. So they're not going to be taking...
Up until about 18 months ago, the Ukrainians were too.
Ukraine, indeed. So,
but things can change, can't they?
But I mean, the point is that the Ukrainians and others expect that they're going to be allowed into the EU and given loads of money by British taxpayers. And the fact of the matter is, they're not. But the extremists who are in control in Kiev, Poroshenko was saying, we're going to take back Novorossiya, we're going to take back the Crimea. If we go to war, if Britain goes to war with Russia over what's happened, where the Russian-speaking population...
But it's much more likely to be sanctions and things like that, isn't it?
Well, we're sending...
Are
British
we really going to take the Russians
well,
off?
Well, we're sending British troops to train the Ukrainian National Guard. That's
yes,
what
but that's one step removed from war with Russia.
No, because if you train the Ukrainian National Guard, then you are involved in war.
I mean, haven't we been...
You are involved.
Hang on, but haven't we been doing this for decades?
Yes,
training people who are at war
we've been training terrorists which have been infiltrated into Syria. There are people in the British military who know exactly who the Syrian terrorists are because they train them in Jordan and in Turkey. And ultimately, I would see the main way of dealing with this is through the police. That Reuters report about Turkey, the Turkish police have found out that their own intelligence services are involved in this stuff. Now, that gives me some hope that the police are independent of the intelligence services. Ultimately, I would like to see the police of the world doing their duty and dealing with these intelligence service thugs.
No, you know what?
But if they don't, then it will be war.
And this reminds me rather of the Westminster VIP paedophile scandal here in Britain, where it turns out that as the police were questioning various abusers in high positions, MI5 would arrive on the scene, or security services, and close down the investigation.
Indeed. Now, the first port of call for dealing with all the evil things we're talking about is for the law to be genuinely, impartially enforced.
But it isn't, surely.
We need to see generals and bankers being sent to prison for life, and life meaning life. Now, if we don't see that, then the other fallback, of course, is that we'll have to be fighting.
Sorry, Martin. And those people you're talking about, the bankers, the generals, etc., people who've been involved in war crimes or sexual abuse of children, actually, they're too big to jail.
Well, in that case, it's going to come to fighting then, isn't it? Ultimately, these people won't go to jail. They just better look under their cars every morning to see if there's a car bomb, as people in Northern Ireland had to do whatever side they were on for 30 years. That's the reality. You either do things are done the nice way through the law, or they're done in other ways. And, you know, the obvious thing to do is to make sure these people pay the price, the 100% price.
And, I mean, what about the role then of the intelligence police, the sort of military police involved in all of this? So, I mean, how can the police be investigating these things and then just have another police force come along and say, well, sorry, guys, we're closing down this investigation due to national security?
Yes, well, I mean, at that point, the civilian police force has to grow a pair, basically. In Colombia, the civilian police force a few years ago raided army headquarters because they had information about Operation Dragon, which was a plan by the army to assassinate all the trade union leadership in Colombia over a period of 2 weeks. And before they were just about to carry it out, the national police raided army headquarters and arrested various people. That's the sort of thing that I would see.
We had a similar sort of thing actually in Turkey with the Ergenekon, didn't we?
Lots of army officers arrested, accused of being terrorism, convicted in the courts and sent to prison. Absolutely. That's the way forward.
Okay, then finally, then Macedonia this week. We've heard that it's quite... I mean, first of all, whereabouts, isn't it part of the old Yugoslavia?
It is, yeah. Or it was.
Bulgaria has called a claim by Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov that Bulgaria and Albania were trying to split Macedonia, highly irresponsible. On Wednesday, Lavrov blamed the political crisis in Macedonia on outside forces trying to exert influence on Prime Minister Nikolai Gurevsky over his refusal to back Western sanctions against Moscow. Events in Macedonia are fairly brutally managed from outside, Lavrov said, in the Council of the Federation, the upper house of the Russian Parliament, according to TASS.
Well, Macedonia is in the firing line because the Russians have done a deal with the Turks to send a gas pipeline to Turkey, which will then go up to Greece and through Macedonia, eventually ending up in Austria, to supply the EU, cutting out the Ukraine. And Macedonia, traditionally Orthodox population majority, pro-Russian in its orientation. But of course you've got a substantial Albanian minority, and the Kosovo Liberation Army came over in Kosovo Liberation Army uniforms and had a massive firefight with the Macedonian police a couple of weeks ago. Scores of people were killed. That is terrorism by any definition, shooting at police officers. But in actual fact, the Kosovo Liberation Army, armed and trained by NATO. No doubt British special forces know them intimately. They are terrorists.
In Macedonia,
so are the British special forces.
There's been a whole series of leaked tapes of private conversations of politicians, mass demonstrations.
They're trying to topple the existing leadership because they're not happy with their stance on the sanctions on Russia and the fact that, of course, it's perfectly logical, but Macedonia's got a lot to gain from running a Russian pipeline through there. That could actually transform the prospects of the country. So, you know, that's why they're probably quite in favour of it. But the possibility of destabilising these countries always exists. So you've got a liberal opposition that's trying to destabilise the current regime using the usual techniques of colour revolution. And you've also got armed terrorists coming over the border from Albania trying to create a greater Albania. And all of this is being orchestrated by NATO intelligence services, for sure.
Well, you could say that, but actually they're calling these leaked tapes the bombs over in Macedonia, and they're accusing the country's prime minister, dreadfully difficult, looks like a difficult name to pronounce anyway, Nikola Gruevski, of orchestrating a wiretapping program to spy on more than 20,000 people. I imagine that's political dissidents across the country.
Yeah, but you have to laugh.
And they're calling them the bombs, these leaked
tapes. Yes, but you have to laugh because the NSA and GCSQ
the opposition says it. The opposition says it obtained the tapes from sources within the Macedonian Secret Service.
Well, there you go. But, I mean, the point is 20,000 people have had their phones tapped. We know from Edward Snowden that millions of people have had their phone taps by the Western Secret Services. Is that okay? I say it's not. But 20,000 is nothing, is it?
Celebrating diversity, this is Bristol's BCFM 93.2.
Dr. Catherine Albrecht got so fed up with Google that she got together to create her own search engine. But she's more well known for her work on microchip implants, described by many as part of a growing catalogue of potentially harmful technology, or beast tech. These implants were originally known as the VeriChip. It's designed to go under the skin originally of animals, now humans too. It means no more troublesome wallets full of cards. All you need is a sharp prick in the soft tissue between your thumb and forefinger. But one of the things they don't tell you is the electromagnetic waves those chips emit could cause cancer. So let's have a listen to an extract now from an interview by Julian Charles on the Mind Renewed podcast with Dr. Catherine Albrecht about these microchips.
At about the same time, I was contacted by a dog owner whose dog had developed a fast-growing tumor around his implanted microchip. And she was a childless woman. She loved her dog like a child. She pursued this to the nth degree, and she began to uncover research, particularly out of Europe, that these microchip implants were causing cancer in people's pets. And not willing to let that go, she then pursued it further and found that there were a whole series of 10 years' worth of studies that had been published showing that these microchips, the very same ones they were putting in the Alzheimer's patients, were causing extraordinary havoc in laboratory settings where they were being placed into mice and rats. And what we found, because she shared this research with me, I went over to the Medical University of Harvard and found even more of it. This wasn't even digitized and online. I mean, I was down in the basement photocopying documents. I mean, it was crazy. And we found
good old-fashioned
that,
approach, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So we found that when you inject these, and it's actually kind of interesting, it's a live transponder, which what this means, you think of it as an inert capsule of glass with a microchip inside of it. But what it really is, it's a device that is picking up and amplifying electromagnetic radiation from the environment. That's how it operates. So it doesn't have its own power source. It doesn't emit anything. But if it's around power that's operating on its frequency, it will pick it up and amplify it inside the flesh. And as we know, exposure to electromagnetic radiation is controversial to begin with, but when you put that deep inside the flesh where there's already an irritant because it's a foreign body inside of an animal or a person, then it seems to give rise, I mean, we certainly know this from the researchers who wrote this specifically, that it was giving rise to cancer. It was actually causing cancer in the surrounding tissue. And between 1 and 10% of mice implanted with these who have nothing else done to them, they're just control mice that are being numbered so they can be used in experiments, 1 to 10% of them were having to be killed because of the size of the tumors around the microchips. And when you cut open the tumor, glistening inside like the pit of a peach, there's the microchip. Yeah, people can see this, by the way, at chipmenot.com. The report is up there, the photos of the tumors, the photos of the mice, all the research, the links, it's all there, the evidence. Chipmenot.com is an anti-animal chipping website. We've received many reports from pet owners that we've posted as well, along with their stories and evidence, and that's chipmenot.com.
Yeah, she said that quite enough times. I don't need to repeat it. Chipmenot.com. But, I mean, effectively what these RFID chips, Martin, are is a little transponder. That is to say, when it gets within near location to a grid, which is going to pick up these RFID chips, it picks up the fact and it sends a little message back. So it's a bit like, you know, the way aircraft work as they're flying through the sky. The radar, the people, the air traffic control will ping the aircraft and they'll get a little ping back from the aircraft. That's how these things work. So people don't necessarily realise what they're getting into when they get one of these chips, and that means your dog can be followed everywhere. Now, we had an interview last year on here, actually maybe even it was as long as 18 months ago, which showed that actually the military organisations such as NATO, for example, have actually got a grid out there. So you could be pinging their grid without yourself even knowing that people are actually watching you on a screen moving around the world.
Well, we just had that story about how 20,000 people in Macedonia have allegedly have their had their phones tapped. And meanwhile, we've got full spectrum dominance by NATO, effectively. They can see anything, anywhere in the world at any time, even now when we haven't got chips. It's extraordinary.
And,
but nevertheless, they're good at watching things, but they're not good at, you know, their enemies are better at getting around them. And it's, you know, warfare still remains an extremely hazardous enterprise, no matter who you are.
Yeah, I mean, basically, it's like the end to privacy. That's where it seems to be. There's all sorts of different ways in which the information that you're giving about yourself and that people are taking about is being consolidated, actually.
Yeah.
And that's just... The another side to this, of course, is that we've recently had a change in the law, which means that the security services cannot breach other laws like Data Protection Act and things like
that. Yeah, but what they've done is they've retrospectively, I mean, but the Tories are going to bring this in now, where they've basically retrospectively, I don't think it's actually, you shouldn't have retrospective law, where they're basically saying, oh, well, all the stuff we're doing, we're going to make it legal.
Well, okay, here's a story. Intelligence officers were given immunity from hacking laws, mm-hmm. the tribunal's told. It legislative changes exempting law enforcement officers from a ban on breaking into people's digital devices were never debated by Parliament. And this is literally just last Friday as we were doing this show. That's Owen Boycott in The Guardian. GCHQ staff, intelligence officers and police have been given immunity from prosecution for hacking into computers, laptops and mobile phones under legislative changes that were never fully debated by Parliament, the tribunal's been told. The unnoticed rewriting of a key clause of the Computer Misuse Act has exempted law enforcement officials from the prohibition on breaking into other people's laptops, databases, mobile phones or digital systems. It came into force in May. The amended Clause 10, entitled somewhat misleadingly Savings, is designed to prevent officers from committing a crime when they remotely access computers of suspected criminals. The Act is primarily deployed to provide legal cover for domestic investigations. It's thought that individual warrants are not being obtained to justify each inquiry. Now, Martin, this is kind of, I mean, this is pretty last days of Rome stuff, isn't it? It looks to me pretty clear that what's going on here is secretly... certain law enforcement officers have been breaking the law, and so what's happened is quietly, without Parliament being told, the law has been changed to suit them. I mean, this is outrageous.
Yes, but also, of course, think of the logical point. If the law's been changed to make what they were doing previously now legal, even though it's not been debated by Parliament, then it's as logically the case that what they were doing previously was illegal, just like rigging markets or involving yourself in terrorism in foreign countries because it's all under the rubric of national security.
Well, it's
and the goal ultimately should be a rule of law which will actually be applied to the intelligence services, the bankers and the military, and that means lots of senior people shouldn't go home for pensions, they should all go to prison. Now, if they're not going to go to prison, then we're going to have to think about other ways to deal with this, and they won't always be entirely, you know, if we're not going to have law, then we're going to have chaos, effectively.
Another story, a related one, to do with things that have been covered up under the guise of national security, we hear. This is Jeremy Scarhill at The Intercept, excellent source of info. Germany is the telltale heart of America's drone wars. A top secret US intelligence document obtained by The Intercept, and this is back in the end of April actually, confirms that the sprawling US military base in Ramstein, Germany, serves as the high-tech heart of America's drone program. Ramstein is the site of a satellite relay station that enables drone operators in the US Southwest to communicate with their remote aircraft in Yemen, Somalia, Afghanistan, and all other targeted countries. The top secret slide deck dated July 2012, this must be a Snowden leak, I guess, provides the most detailed blueprint seen to date of the technical architecture used to conduct strikes with Predator and Reaper drones. Well, hang on a minute. That means that Germany is at the hub of this illegal war crime drone program, assassination program.
Yes, it is. And of course, it's not really in Germany's national interest to be seen to be America's front organisation, effectively. And ultimately, the Germans are going to have to consider their position on all of this. But I mean, Merkel and much of the German establishment are in the pocket of the Americans, just like the establishment here.
I mean, they certainly don't give that impression. I mean, they certainly seem to kick back against any kind of pressure from the US much more than the Brits do.
Well, to some extent, yes, but to some extent, no. I think it's very difficult to challenge these powerful institutions that run the West, the Anglo-American elite that dominate the financial services industries and so on, and the military infrastructure. But I think what's beginning to happen is that the rest of the world is waking up. So the victory parade in Moscow the other day to celebrate the end of World War II, victory in Europe, the Chinese army were present on that parade. They had their troops there, and the president of China stood shoulder to shoulder with Putin throughout the ceremony. And I think that what's happening is that the outsiders in the international system, the Russians, the Chinese, the Iranians, the South Africans, the Latin Americans, are getting heartily sick of the manipulations and violence of the oligarchy that runs the West. And all of this is going to end in massive floods of tears for everybody. And I don't see there's any way around that now. The economy is going to collapse. There's going to be major fighting. But in actual fact, the West is going to lose because military technology is not enough. It's not enough to win. They've never actually managed to win any of these conflicts. And look at what's happened in the Ukraine, where essentially a scratch army of committed rebels has thrashed those who came to try and take away their country. And that's the way the real world works.
Getting bigger by being better. The number one choice for Bristol. This is BCFM 93.2.
Bit depressing, Martin, but on the bright side here, Prince Charles has had a visit this week, hasn't he, over to see Gerry Adams and Martin McGuinness, and he's shaking the hands of IRA Commander Martin McGuinness on the Northern Ireland peace trip.
Well, I think that just goes to show that with common sense and a sense of proportion, even the most intractable of conflicts can be resolved, and this is to be welcomed, frankly.
He's not the first royal to meet Mr. McGuinness. In 2012, the Queen shook hands with him when they met in Belfast for the first time. They also enjoyed a private meeting. But the background to this was, of course, the killing of Lord Mountbatten, who was, I think it was his great-uncle, Prince Charles's great-uncle. What was the context for that?
Well, I mean, the context was the troubles that were going on. The IRA.
Why was Mountbatten targeted then?
Well, because he was seen as a symbol of the British establishment, and you know, that he was probably involved in the deals that were done to get Bormann out of Germany at the end of World War II, for example. So Mountbatten, very much at the heart of all of that, seen by the IRA very much as a kind of symbol of the British establishment, and therefore fair game. I mean, as Gerry Adams said last week, I mean, he ought to have realised if he's going to come to the west of Ireland and put himself right in our sights, then he was, you know, something was likely to happen to him. But he was blasé about it.
This is for all very positive stuff with, you know, the sort of, it seems like some sort of friendship growing between the Republican movement and the royal family.
Well, one of the things Prince Charles said was that the death of his great uncle brought home to him the reality of the troubles in a way that nothing else could have done. And of course, the really sad thing was not just that Mountbatten died, but that also various, you know, teenage boys died who were working on the boat and so on. And I'm afraid war is actually always a miserable, nasty, horrible business, whoever engages in it.
Worth pointing out that one of the big flashpoints, of course, for the Troubles was the Bloody Sunday incident when Indeed. Lord Carrington, our Bilderberg chairman chum, was in charge at the Ministry
of
Defence.
Well, I mean, as Gerry Adams pointed out, I mean, Prince Charles is Colonel-in-Chief of the Parachute Regiment. And, of course, many people on this side of the water don't remember, but in Ballymurphy, several months before Bloody Sunday, I think 12 or 13 civilians were killed over a several day period by the parachute regiment. People in Belfast remember it, people in Bristol less so.
But things aren't all hunky-dory over in Ireland, because just a week or so before the general election, Jock Davidson was murdered. He was an IRA commander. He was just shot dead in the street.
Yes, and that may be there are various theories floating around about who may have done it. The Police Service of Northern Ireland is suggesting that it wasn't the Loyalists, and it probably wasn't the dissident Republicans. It could be some personal grudge that somebody had against him, or it could just be a message-sending exercise, just as before the Irish elections, Gerry Adams was dragged in to be questioned about the death of Jean McConnell years before, and then eventually released. And that somebody shooting an ex-IRA operative like that is perhaps sending a message to the Republican movement: we know where you are, we know who you are, we can take any of you down at any time we like. Maybe. I don't know.
Could it
no
be
doubt
related?
They will have discussed that.
Could it be
themselves.
Related to the visit from the royal family? Almost like saying, well, you know, maybe the agreement being done behind the scenes beforehand?
The Republican movement in Ireland has agreed to commit itself to supporting the Police Service of Northern Ireland. And just like the killing of Nemtsov in Russia, I expect them to do their duty and try to get to the bottom of who did
and
it.
And I suppose all any ex-IRA people who don't commit themselves to that are kind of self-marginalising, aren't they?
Well, they are. But, I mean, the PSNI at the moment are suggesting that it's not dissident Republicans who've done this. If it was, it would be extremely unwise of them and absolutely wrong. But we'll just have to wait on the police investigation, won't we?
Celebrating diversity, this is Bristol's BCFM 93.2.
Well, his name is the Reverend Stephen Sizer, and he's the man with the forbidden truth from the band Vicar of Virginia Water in Surrey. He's a world expert author on Zionism, but he's been told by the Bishop of Guildford if he talks about the Middle East in public or on social media, he'll be defrocked. Tonight, then, one of the most recent interviews with the Reverend Stephen Sizer, recorded before he was banned earlier this year.
We're dealing with guilt for the Holocaust and fear of anti-Semitism, and they are used effectively by Zionists to silence criticism of Israel's colonization of Palestine. It goes back to the 19th century when some very eccentric Christian leaders began to predict that the Jews would go back to the Christian nation, and they saw this as part of Britain's blessing to the world. We were civilizing the world with colonization, introducing people to a British way of life and a Christian faith. And so that was why Britain got behind Zionism, because it furthered Britain's interests in the Middle East, competing with France and Germany. And the Zionists recognized that Britain was going to support them, and that's where we ended up with the Balfour Declaration and the broken promises Britain made to the Arabs as much as to the Jews. It's a Christian agenda. Zionism is predominantly a Christian heresy, not Jewish. There are 9-10 times more Christian Zionists in the world than Jewish. It's a product of a Manichaean dualistic view of the world, the good guys and the bad guys, and we're the good guys, obviously. And if you go back the beginning of the 20th century, with the rise of communism, you found that evil was equated with communism, atheism, and the persecution of the church. And so right through to the 50s and 60s, particularly in America, you know, with McCarthyism, it was the free West against Russia and communism. And Israel was part of the free West. It was our beachhead into the Middle East. And Syria and Egypt and other countries aligned themselves more with Russia. But as Russia declined in influence in terms of communism, Islam took over that role as the personification of evil. And so today you find the covers of the books change, but the content stays the same, and they just change the end of the chapters. You go back to the 50s and 60s, Christian Zionists were talking about Saddam Hussein being the Antichrist, because he was trying to rebuild Babylon, and he even looked like Nebuchadnezzar, they said. But when he dies, Osama bin Laden becomes the Antichrist. So you've got to have the demon side. You've got to have the bad guys. What Jesus called us to be peacemakers, not widow makers. Mm. And what they're doing is they're taking promises God made to the Jewish people 4,000 years ago through Abraham, and they're applying them to today as if Jesus never came. And so the church and the coming of Jesus is a parenthesis to God's continuing purposes for the Jewish people. And so they take passages out of the Old Testament and apply them to today when, you know, it's like a cheese grater. They're not going through the grid of the New Testament. They're not going through the grid of the teaching of Jesus, who called us to be ambassadors for peace, to love our enemies and pray for those who persecute us as the way to change their heart and mind, not to kill them, but to love them, if you like, into the kingdom. You find a range of opinions, and within the kind of Christian Zionist circles I encounter, they've elevated the Jewish people to a special place in God's purposes, either with a view that they will come to see the light when Jesus returns, or they are accepted by virtue of their pedigree, by the virtue of their race. Mm. You know, they are the chosen people, and therefore they get a pass, a free pass, as it were. But either way, they have politicized the kingdom of heaven, if you like. And their active agenda is very concrete. It's to lobby Congress, lobby Parliament. It is to finance the emigration of Russian Jews to Palestine. It is to support the settlement program. So there are twinning between churches and settlements. Mm. Adopt a settlement, fund them, feed them, clothe them, protect them. They're seeking to rebuild the temple, destroy the Dome of the Rock and rebuild the temple. So you've got an alliance with extreme Jewish groups that want to achieve that, all in the belief that Jesus will not come by himself. We must bring him by fighting, by supporting his chosen people. What you find is churches in the West will support humanitarian work among the Palestinians. We'll support a hospital, we'll put money into a blind school or something, but they're not dealing with a structural injustice of the occupation. When you see the truth, it's hard to unsee it. And when you've experienced what the Palestinians are suffering, when you've lived with them, when you've slept in their homes, you've eaten at their tables, and you've experienced the aggression of the Israeli authorities, the so-called IDF, you know, their army, when you've been fired at, tear gas, sound bombs, as I have, when you've experienced the raw racism of Zionism, you can't go to sleep at night unless you maintain your perseverance in doing what you think is right. The, you know, resistance helps refine your arguments. It helps you become stronger. And so actually the opposition I've faced, the complaints, the criticisms, have only purified my passion and my zeal to do what I believe is right. Repudiate racism, I repudiate anti-Semitism, but there is a basic injustice going on, and we cannot hide eyes from it.
Well, he's not allowed to say that anymore, unless he, otherwise he'll get his marching orders from the Church of England. But there was the Reverend Stephen Sizer, Vicar of Virginia Water Parish in Surrey, in London, speaking about what he's a world expert, actually, in Martin, which is Zionism.
Yeah, I mean, the reason why he was banned, if you remember, Tony, is because he linked on his Facebook page to an article which basically pointed the finger at the Israeli intelligence services for their involvement in the 9/11 attacks. Now, I'm afraid that there is lots of evidence to suggest that they were involved in those attacks. If they were, and I suggested earlier that they may have been involved in the 7/7 attacks, then in actual fact, we're already at war with Israel. That's already the case.
9/11, Israel did it. All the proof in the world. That's the article he linked.
That's what's caused him to be silenced. And of course, the evidence, people should check that article out, because there is, in fact, lots of very good evidence. That
don't believe us. Make your mind up. Read the article.
Celebrating diversity. This is Bristol's BCFM 93.2.
On to something a bit special now, and that is HAARP, because the Russians apparently are spending millions of rubles on a Russian version of this enormous, great, mysterious, supposedly military, maybe it's just for university research, massive grid. It's like loads of power pylons all strung together over in Alaska. Martin, what do you know about HAARP? Because there's been a lot of speculation over the years that this is used, potentially anyway, to manipulate weather.
Yeah, well, if you think about it, there's overwhelming evidence that militaries around the world have tried to manipulate weather and geological phenomenon. And it's not surprising that they managed to get some results. So, for example, it came out under a Freedom of Information request some years ago that the RAF in the 1950s were carrying out a weather experiment on Bodmin Moor, where they managed to create a rain cloud which then washed through the city, the town of Lynmouth, and killed several people. It's only under a FOI request that finally came out that flood was in fact created by the RAF. Now, you can imagine that with the amounts of money that the Americans and others have got, that they have certainly been researching how to manipulate weather and geological phenomena.
I'm not sure whether we should believe them or not, but the US military last year said they were going to shut down HAARP this place over in Alaska. But anyway, last year I spoke to a chap called Steve Barker, who's done quite a lot of work on HAARP. So here's the views of Steve Barker on what is this thing in Alaska.
My name is Steve Barker, and I've been researching and looking into the issue of free energy for some years now. And I've found that there's a lot of evidence that free energy machines and sources of free energy have been discovered, but they have been suppressed by the authorities. The most well-known example of this was Tesla, who is responsible for the source of electricity that we have, which is called alternating current. Tesla also invented a method of free energy, and he built this tower to demonstrate it. Before he was able to bring it to the market, his financier, who was J.P. Morgan, said, if we can't monitor it, if we can't meter it, we're not interested in funding it. And they stopped the experiment. Tesla later found out that he was not able to get funding anywhere else, and he became a recluse and spent the rest of his life living in a hotel in New York. Now, one of the things that Tesla had discovered is an effect called pulse DC. With the power of using direct current, you get an effect called back EMF. This means that a direct current, which is cut off, has a momentum. It keeps running, and this creates the effect called back EMF. And you can see this if you've got a battery and you break the connection, you sometimes get a little spark. That's called back EMF. Now, there are other people who have actually explored and used this method of harnessing free energy from electricity. One man was called Edwin Gray, and he developed a electric motor that was powerful enough to drive a motor car in the 1970s. This was an electric motor which not only ran on electricity with a battery, but also charged the battery. So the batteries could then be swapped, and this would mean that he would have free energy enough to drive a motor car. He was offered £1 million for the invention by the Japanese motor industry, but he was persuaded to keep it in-house and offer it more locally in America for presumably nationalistic reasons. However, it never ever came to the market. He got involved in legal hassles and difficulties in further development, and eventually he was not able to pursue it, and after he died, his equipment was picked up and his inventions were collected by security agents, and they were put into storage somewhere, we don't know where. HAARP, a high altitude auroral research project. HAARP is an array of antennae which covers nearly a square mile in Alaska, and it's fed by a huge amount of electricity which is generated from the gas that was discovered in the mountains in Alaska, which it wasn't financially worthwhile piping into America, and so they set up this research system. Now, HAARP is allegedly for high altitude research and pumps this huge amount of electromagnetic power into the higher atmosphere, into the ionosphere, for research purposes. Now, it's supposed to be just for universities and things to use, but it's also interesting that it's got implications for weather control. and it is illegal by UN charter for the weather control to be used as a military weapon. HAARP, however, does obviously have military implications. One of its uses is that it can detect things underground. It also has the ability to bounce a power supply off the ionosphere to another point so that it could be used, for example, if there was a battlefield that needed a lot of energy, it could be sourced by HAARP by bouncing it off the ionosphere. It is also able to operate as over-the-horizon radar, so it could detect low-altitude aircraft coming in which were beyond the horizon, which normal radar can't detect. And it also can create the very high energy within the atmosphere. It's very likely that this came about as a result of the Star Wars project, which was introduced by Reagan, and the idea is that it could produce enough electricity to destroy the electronics in an ICBM or a missile coming in from space.
Now, I know there's also supposed to be a kind of mini HAARP as well, not far away from Alaska.
Yeah, that's called High Pass, and that's another similar arrangement, which is about 200 miles north of HAARP, which is not often spoken about. And this is used to triangulate the forces that are operated from HAARP. There was a patent developed by a gentleman called Bernard Eastland, which was for a weather control equipment.
Really prompted by this announcement that even though the US are saying that they're closing their version of HAARP, that the Russians are. $400 million, apparently, they're now about to spend, according to one Russian website, on a Russian version of this. Yet the Americans say they've closed theirs down.
Well, all I'll say is what I said earlier. They certainly have experimented in the past with trying to control weather and geological phenomenon. I wouldn't be at all surprised if they're still doing the same thing.
Okay, Martin, and thanks very much there to Steve Barker for his insight into that. You'll find links to much of what we've been talking about here online at thisweek.org.uk. Time to sign off now for the Murdoch News at 7, followed by Mohammed's Arabian Nights, our sister show Dialects, here on BCFM at Wednesday at noon, where you can hear the full interview about positive psychology in Bristol Green Capital with Sam Downey. If you're on broadband internet, you can hear all our previous Friday drive times, including all our investigations at thisweek.org.uk. You can follow my Twitter feed in between shows at Tony Gosling. I am Tony Gosling, wishing you a relaxing and enjoyable Whitsun weekend. Not the late spring bank holiday, a Whitsun weekend. Do please join us for Friday drive time at 5 o'clock next week, and don't let the banksters get you down.
Is Bristol's BCFM on 93.2 online and on your mobile. BCFM is an award-winning community radio station for Bristol, bringing you national news on the hour, live from the Sky News Centre.
From the Sky News Centre at 7. Travel experts are calling on the European Union to bring in minimum standards at every hotel and apartment complex. It follows the latest developments in the case of two British children killed by carbon monoxide poisoning in Corfu in 2006. It's emerged the electrician convicted over their deaths was rehired by the hotel where it happened, but has now been let go. Our correspondent Jonathan Samuels is there.
We have seen today that they've stepped up security. We were told in no uncertain terms that we weren't allowed onto the hotel campus. In fact, the manager came out to speak to us. Having said that, people are still staying at the hotel. We've seen a steady trickle of people come and go.
David Cameron has begun what he admits will be a lengthy process as he tries to reform Britain's relationship with the European Union. He's been attending a summit of EU leaders in Latvia. Nicola Sturgeon has asked the former Scottish Secretary to consider his position as an MP after he admitted leaking a controversial memo about her during the election campaign. It alleged she told the French ambassador she wanted David Cameron to remain in Downing Street, something they both denied. Alistair Carmichael says he's tried to make amends.
I have apologised both to the First Minister and to the French ambassador. If I were still a minister at the moment, I would tender my resignation. But I have told the Cabinet Secretary that I will not be accepted the ministerial severance payment, which is normally given to ministers when they leave office.
A ninth man's been remanded in custody after being charged in connection with the Hatton Garden jewellery heist in central London. John Harbinson from Essex is accused of conspiracy to burgle. Army experts have now detonated an unexploded World War II bomb found near Wembley Stadium yesterday. The device triggered the evacuation of hundreds of homes and businesses and the Britain's Got Talent studio. And in cricket, New Zealand have closed on 303 for 2 in the first test against England at Lord's. England scored 389 in their first innings. Kane Williamson is 92, not out. That's the latest. I'm Andy Hayes.